So, today I can continue with another episode from Dorgan's Record of Things Heard. Does anyone have any questions before that? Or some subject that they would like to have addressed? Something from yesterday, or
yeah, but it was not from yesterday. Okay. Maybe death.
Death. Mm. Death.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Zen answer would be that it was addressed yesterday.
Sorry.
The Zen answer would be that it was addressed yesterday, death. Because it's always being addressed. Obliquely. En façon de billet. Which is how everything is always addressed, in fact. Obliquely. Not directly. As it so happens, the passage that I had come upon today has to do with death as well, so. Okay. We'll go to that. I'm kind of happy that I brought this book because I haven't ever looked at it before. Kind of glad that I did. It also allows me to use as a bookmark this beautiful. I saw these frescoes in Padova, in Padua, in Italy.
Yes, I saw it.
You've seen those?
Chapel.
In the chapel?
Yeah. Beautiful.
Absolutely.
It's from 15th century.
Yeah, from Giotto.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Giotto was a farmer's son.
Very simple. Yeah.
So great.
And in these frescoes, I came out of there. You're only allowed to stay for 15 minutes in this little chapel.
Yeah.
And only 25 people at a time.
Yes.
And before you go in, you have to spend 15 minutes in a special room so that the temperature of all the people comes down to a certain level before you go into the chapel, because they're very delicate. And after 15 minutes I came out and I found myself crying. It was so moving, so beautiful. There weren't many postcards. I took the ones that there were. They were not my favorite images, but really fabulous. Beautiful. So that allows me to mark my place with this.
So now we want to see it.
Ah. It doesn't really reflect so much the... It's the image of the man of the rich merchant who had the chapel built and commissioned Giotto to paint these frescoes. And he's offering the chapel as his offering to the god, so that his father, who was usurier, we say in French,
a moneylender,
and earned fabulous amounts of money by exploiting people, and this man was hoping to save his father's soul by offering this chapel and the frescoes of Giotto.
Did work.
I don't know. It certainly left a beautiful record of his passage on earth, you know, and of impermanence, I guess, you know, which is what this talks about too, this passage, which is death, you know. And the postcard doesn't really do justice to the particularly frescoes, but so this passage, I will do like I did yesterday. I'll read and translate as we go along. In fact, it's quite a long passage, so I just picked out part of it because it's too long. So Dogen is talking here. There is a proverbial saying, though I sell gold, there is none to buy. The way of Buddhas and patriarchs is also like this. It is not that they begrudge the way, but although they are always offering it, people do not get it. Gaining the way does not depend upon the sharpness or dullness of the faculties. Everyone can awaken to the truth. Depending upon zeal or sloth, there is slowness or quickness in attaining the way. The difference between zeal and sloth is whether one's determination is thoroughgoing. It is because he does not, when one's determination is not thoroughgoing, it is because he does not contemplate impermanence. We die from moment to moment, or from thought to thought, ultimately abiding, not abiding even for a while. As long as you are alive for the time being, do not pass the time in vain. So this is the first paragraph. Shall I translate roughly? Okay. So there,
please.
Il y a une phrase des anciens. Bien que je vende de l'or, il n'y en a pas à acheter. La voix des Bouddhas et patriarches est ainsi aussi. Ce n'est pas que les begrudge. How would you translate begrudge?
What's the full sentence, begrudge?
It is not that they begrudge the way, but although they are always offering it, people don't get it.
Begrudge.
Quoi? Oui, quelque chose comme ça.
Yeah.
Ce n'est pas
qu'ils n'en ont rien à faire.
Voilà. Oui. C'est pas qu'ils n'en ont rien à faire, mais ils sont toujours en train de l'offrir, mais les gens ne le prennent pas. Atteindre la voie à la voie ne dépend pas du acuité ou le dullness.
Paresse.
Quoi?
Paresse.
Paresse, oui, peut-être. Des facultés.
Oh non, c'était pas paresse.
Non, dormance.
C'était pas paresse. C'était l'acuité ou la manque d'acuité.
Voilà.
C'est vraiment ça.
Des facultés.
Ouais, des facultés.
Tout le monde peut s'éveiller à la vérité. Selon le zèle on dit, ouais. Ou le paresse, peut-être, il y a lenteur ou vitesse dans le processus d'atteindre la voie. La différence entre zèle, c'est un mot, hein, zèle,
mm-hmm.
Oui. Et paresse.
Le zèle,
c'est
le talent.
Okay. Oh, c'est
l'enthousiasme.
Faire plus que ce qu'on te demande de faire.
Okay.
Donc, la différence entre zèle et paresse dépend de la la détermination de chacun est totale ou non. Quand la détermination n'est pas totale, c'est parce que on ne contemple pas l'impermanence. On meurt d'un instant à l'autre, d'une pensée à l'autre. Ultimement, on ne demeure même pas un instant. Tant qu'on est en vie, pour l'instant, ne passez pas le temps en vain. Ok ? Ça, c'est une traduction un peu sur le tas. That's the next paragraph. An ancient saying has it, the rat in the storehouse hungers for food. The ox pulling the plow in the field hasn't his fill of grass. What this means is that one is hungry, though in the midst of food. One lacks for grass while being in the middle of grass. People are also like this. Though they are in the midst of the Buddha way, they do not merge with the way. If the mind which seeks fame and profit does not come to rest, one will be ill at ease all his life long. Donc, encore une phrase des anciens. Le rat dans le...
La cave, la grange.
La grange, je ne sais pas. A faim pour de la nourriture. Le bœuf qui tire le...
Charrue,
c'est ça ? Mm-hmm. Là, oui. Mm-hmm. Dans le champ, n'a pas son... n'est pas son sa faim pour l'herbe n'est pas rassasiée. Cela veut dire qu'il y en a un qui a faim, bien qu'il est au milieu de la nourriture. Et il y en a un qui, dont l'herbe lui manque, bien qu'il est au milieu de l'herbe. Les êtres sont aussi comme ça, les gens sont aussi comme ça. Bien qu'au milieu de la voie du Bouddha, ils ne se... merge, ils se...
fusionnent
pas avec la voie. Tu vois. Si l'esprit qui cherche le célébrité et profit ne trouve pas de repos, on sera toujours mal à l'aise toute sa vie. Ok, donc, so, is that clear for everyone, the translation, la traduction et... Oui. Ok. So, we die from moment to moment, ultimately not abiding even for a while. You know, when you do, for example, a breathing practice, I'm putting on my sunglasses actually. It's really a very concrete example of it with the breathing practice. So if you count your breath, you have this usual idea that you're advancing 1, 2, 3, and you're going to 10, and then you come back. But if you really do it, each one, so you do 1, and then you go to 2, and it's as if you don't even have time for the 1 because you're already the 2. And you don't even have time for the 2, you're already the 3. And yet each one, if you do it really, instead of saying 1, 2, 3, you could say right now. Right now. Right now. And in order to say that right now, you have to let go of that previous right now, and the next right now. Otherwise, it's not right now. And physically, you can feel that. If you, and probably you've had this experience if you've gone into the breath, this breathing practice. It physically feels different. There's something you know, it's kind of like dancing through a field of yellow flowers or something. You know, it's really standing in front of Giotto's frescoes. It's just right now, just this breath. And if we don't, if we are caught in the counting of accumulating, of arriving, it's like being in the middle of the way without seeing it. It's like, you know, the rat in the storehouse, which is looking for food and is surrounded by food. Or we say sometimes, this, you know, when we sit here and talk about all of this Buddhist stuff, it's like selling water on the banks of the river. You know, there's the water's right there. There's nothing to sell. Or there's another image from a poem from a koan. I don't remember what the koan is, but the poem is something about how this master, out of great compassion, carries snow to the top of the mountain and fills the well with it. The snow is going to melt. It's useless. It's a useless activity, actually. And yet there are people who are thirsty, and so he does it. So here we are in the middle of this way. And we think that we have to be smart or not smart, or we have to be quick. Only certain people, you know, try to figure out how to be good at it or something. When in fact, there is none of that. The only thing that matters is contemplating, as it says, impermanence. But what does that mean? Contemplating impermanence. The breath practice that I just commented on is a contemplation of impermanence, very concrete contemplation of impermanence. Just watching the clouds go by is a contemplation of impermanence.
Watching your thoughts go by.
Watching thoughts go by, rise and fall, absolutely.
Watching what?
Thoughts, les pensées. I had another one marked here. Oh, yeah. And what... often we think that if we Well, let's say, we think that if we sit a lot or practice regularly or something like that, we will arrive somewhere. We will obtain something. We will become someone. We will become like people who we venerate or something like that. And in fact, that very belief is what prevents us from arriving where we think we need to arrive, because we don't have to go anywhere, we're right already there. When we're trying to be someone else, we're not seeing who we are. When we're projecting into the next breath, we're not experiencing this breath. and so on. So this idea that we sit to get something, we may as well not sit at all, actually, if that's what we're doing, because that ain't going to happen. The only thing that's going to happen is probably frustration, deception, anger, continuation of our patterns, whatever. I've told this story before that one of my first retreats, when I heard a Dharma talk from my teacher's teacher, so some of you know him, Genpo, and I don't remember what he said in the Dharma talk, and but he gave a koan, you know, he told a story about some master who, the only thing I remember of the story too is that the master went up to the podium to give a talk and then went down.
Before he talked.
Right, he didn't say anything, he just went up there and then went down. And I was devastated when I heard this. And I don't, it had nothing to do with what commentary that Genpo did or anything like that. It had to do with the fact that I was devastated that I wasn't going to be anything different.
You were not convinced?
I was not going to be anything different. Mm. That the point of the story was that as he is, the guy was it. And I was so disappointed, so devastated, that, and I cried the entire afternoon, thinking, oh my God, this is it. This is it.
This is all I get.
Right, exactly. And, I think I had heard that before. And in a certain sense, I knew that, and that's why I came to the practice. But even so, very stealthy and subtly, this idea returns again and again. Someone else, something else, somewhere else. When in fact, what we, the gold that is being delivered, is being sold, is this place where no one is, or this no place where everyone is. So there's, everyone is already there, and they're nobody. You know, it's like the story in the Odyssey, where Ulysses, you know, he's caught in the cave of the Cyclops, who's like, you know, slamming off the heads of his men and eating them in one gulp. And Cyclops asks him, and Ulysses is feeding him wine. And Cyclops really likes the wine, and he said, you know, this is really good wine, and who are you? Who is my, you know, host here that's giving me this delicious wine? And Ulysses says, my name is no one, nobody. In order to save his men, in order to save himself, he becomes no one. This is a very powerful image in that book. He's no one. What happens later is that when he manages to stick the burning stake into the Cyclops' eye, and the Cyclops runs out of the cave and starts calling out to his fellow Cyclops for help.
No.
What? And the other Cyclops call back and say, what's going on? Who's hurting you? Who's, you
know. No one.
Nobody, nobody. And so the Cyclops, because they're all one-eyed and they only think about themselves, you know, what a bunch of shit, you know, this guy is, I don't care about him, and they go back into their caves. So they don't come to his assistance. And Ulysses and his men manage to escape, again, by strapping themselves onto the bellies of sheep.
C'est quoi la dernière phrase, là?
Ils s'attachent au ventre des moutons, which are the most meek of animals, right? So they don't go out as great warriors identifying themselves as triumphant. They go out hidden, strapped on the bellies of sheep, with nobody leading the way. Fabulous image. And the same is true for all of us. That's where the true liberation is. That's the gold that is no gold, in fact. And it's right here.
So they are fighters and no fighters.
Exactly. And they fight the fight according to the circumstances.
Yes.
According to what is needed. So there's this other following then from this passage of Dogen. He says, in ancient times, a man came and submitted to Confucius. So we're going way back here, Confucius. Confucius asked him, "Why do you come submit to me?" Confucius, the man replied, "As I look upon you, noble man, in our interview, you have majestic dignity. That is why I submit to you." Then Confucius ordered his disciples to bring out all his chariots, clothing, gold, silver, and property. Giving it all to the man, he said, "It's not me that you're submitting to." And he handed it over to him. So what are we after here? In the story of the sixth patriarch, you know, the... Do you need a translation?
Il faut que je traduise ça. J'ai compris qu'il va, il a enlevé toutes les richesses et il lui a dit, c'est pas à moi que tu es soumis, c'est à ses richesses. Ça.
Ouais. Enfin, il dit même pas ça. Hein. Il dit, c'est pas à moi.
Ah, ses richesses ne sont pas à moi.
Non, 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 non. Il dit, c'est pas à moi.
C'est qu'il faut...
Vous êtes soumis, c'est pas à moi à qui vous êtes soumis.
Oui. C'est à mes richesses. C'est aux richesses. Non, même pas.
Il n'ajoute pas ça.
D'accord.
Il n'ajoute D'accord. pas ça.
Il enlève ses richesses et il dit c'est pas à moi que vous êtes soumis.
Oui.
D'accord.
In the story of the sixth patriarch, which I will briefly summarize, he is this ignorant, you know, like Giotto, who is this farmer's son, untrained. The sixth patriarch is this woodcutter's son. And no, actually his father was an official, but he died. And so the boy has to become a woodcutter to support him. And he overhears in a marketplace someone talking about the Diamond Sutra, and so goes off to a monastery. And eventually, I won't go into all the details, eventually is recognized by the abbot of the monastery as someone who got the gold that was not to be. There was no gold, but he got it, right? Who understands, who realized it. So he decides that he will be his successor. This is the fifth patriarch, making the sixth patriarch his successor. But of course, the 300 monks in the monastery don't like this, because they are sons of wealthy families, important people. They've gone through the regular path to becoming monks, and they expect that one of them will become the next master. And they're educated, scholarly, they know everything, and this seemingly illiterate woodcutter is going to inherit the monastery and everything that goes with it. The abbot, however, realizes this and so gives the the transmission, as we say, the bowl and the robe, at midnight, in secret, to the woodcutter, and tells him to go away, to leave. A few hours later, the monks realize what has gone on, and go after him. Some of them go after him. And when they finally catch up with him, he puts the robe and the bowl down, and he says, it's in here actually, the quote. He says, this robe symbolizes faith. Could it be right to fight over it? Take it if you can. And the main leader of the monks who is chasing him suddenly realizes, he tries to pick it up and he can't take it. And says suddenly to the guy, I have come for the teaching, not for the robe. Please teach me. And the sixth patriarch famously says to him, not thinking good, not thinking evil, before a thought of good and evil, right at this moment, right now, what is your true face? What is the true face of, his name is Monk Mio. So I bring up this only to say that in order that the true heart of the teaching, of the practice, can be preserved, the sixth patriarch willingly gives up the clothing, the symbols, all of the forms, the stuff that would make him, that come with his, that would make him recognized as an awakened master, let's say. He willingly gives it up. In fact, even more than willingly, he has to give it up in order to preserve, to save the truth, the living heart of it, of the, what it really is about. Like Confucius gives up his...
Could I ask you to read again what he says to the monk?
When
he arrives, when he catches up with him?
Yeah.
What did he say?
He says, this robe symbolizes faith. Could it be right to fight over it? Take it away if you can. You can take it away. But he tried, and here it's in the translation, it says, it was immovable as a mountain. Mm. And when he then says, before a thought of good and evil, what is your true face?
Face.
What is your original face? Not thinking good, not thinking evil. So like yesterday we were talking about these dualities, right? That, I think, weren't we? Didn't we talk about that yesterday? As long as we are caught in that duality, we don't see the true face of who we are. As long as we're thinking we're good or we're bad, we're fast or we're slow, we're here or we're there, we miss right here. We miss this right here. If we're thinking about, you know, like when I do that breath meditation exercise with children, I give them a little pile of stones, and each time they complete a cycle of 10 breaths, they move a stone. Just helps give them some structure. And sometimes what happens is they start breathing very quickly so that they can move more stones than the others. You know? So that they're watching who's moving more stones. Very quickly we're caught into this accumulation, competition, evaluation. And so when that happens, I, you know, say, let's forget the stones. Let's just do it without the stones. But we do this within ourselves when we do the breath practice. I'm just using the breath practice because it's a very basic one that everybody has done at some point and that I come back to regularly. I was doing it this morning, and that's why it was very pertinent.
When you say breath practice, do you mean the 1 to 10?
Yeah. There again, very stealthily, very subtly, it creeps in. I'm good at this, I'm not good at this. Let's get to 10 so we can be done with it. Even though we're not going anywhere, and it's not accomplishing anything by getting to 10. There's no accomplishment here. In fact, the accomplishment would be to not arrive anywhere. I forgot what I was talking about. Yeah, what was I talking about?
I don't know. This is a long way.
Death.
Death.
Death. Exactly. That's always the subject.
Yeah.
As we say, life and
nice
death are
of
supreme importance. Yep. That's always the subject.
I always do not, what do you say, now is the moment or just now. I always say, breathing out, let die.
Same thing, basically. Yeah.
Well, it's different.
What's different? Or you think it's different?
No, it feels different. I'm going to try the other one. It's funny.
Well, maybe in the right now, it's an affirmation of life.
Yeah.
More so than a recognition of going away. It's an affirmation of being here, of being. And usually we are in this process of instead of, and our culture, our society is based on this notion of having rather than being. So having an identity rather than being. Having a career, having a place, having a house, having a husband, having a wife, having children. Everything is about having. And even, you know, as we say, how can we put a price on things? How can we, and yet we do. In order to have something, you have to put a price on it.
Yeah. An illness. An illness. And then starting to think.
There's another part to this. I lose the place. No. Where he's then, after the Confucius point, once when the king of a place called Yuji went to his bathhouse boiler room, so the place where the fire is made so that his bath would be hot, he saw the place where the fires are lit, and the worker there saw him and said, "Who is this fellow who comes to the king's boiler room without any notice?" And he chased him out. Et l'ouvrier qui est là le voit et il dit qui est ce type qui vient dans le chaudière du roi sans prévenir. Et il l'a chassé. After being chased out, the regent changed out of the poor clothes he had been wearing. So he had gone in poor clothing. Donc il a changé ses habits. Il avait été dans les habits simples. When he appeared magnificently costumed, the worker, seeing him from a distance, became frightened and fled. Donc, il s'est revêtu de ses habits de roi. Et l'ouvrier, quand il est retourné, l'ouvrier l'a vu de loin et a eu peur et il a fui. At that point, the king hung up his costume on a pole and bowed to it. Donc, le roi a enlevé ses habits et il a mis sur un poteau et il a fait une prosternation devant. Someone asked him what he was doing. He replied, "The fact that I am esteemed by others is not because of my own virtues. It's just because of this costume." Mm. Donc il a dit, quelqu'un lui a demandé ce qu'il faisait et il a dit, le fait qu'on a de l'estime pour moi, ce n'est pas dû à mes vertus, c'est à cause de cette costume, ces vêtements. Dogen adds, "This is the way fools respect others. Respect for the written words of the scriptural teachings is also like this." Donc les fous, c'est comme ça qu'ils respectent les autres. Ils ont du respect pour les autres. Et le respect pour les mots dans les sutras est aussi ainsi. So what is it that we, this ties in with, what is it that we're seeking? What is it that we what is it that we think is life and what is it that we think is death? We tend to confuse life with avoiding death by dressing up, by possessing, turning our eyes away from it. And then we miss life. Like John Lennon says, you know, life is what happens when we're planning for something else. Performing for some audience, and we miss the true story. And it's really as basic as just staying with this one breath and not going beyond. There is no beyond. No, it's the other side of the river is here. Like we say in the funny story. Yeah. The guy who wants to get to the other side, and the guy on the other side says to him, "You're already there." So what is the time? She was going away.
J'ai pas la même heure que Kathleen, en fait. J'ai 9 et toi, tu as 5, c'est ça?
Non, moi, j'ai 7 et demi, 8.
Ah, bon, on a la même heure.
Sur l'autre côté, 7 et demi, 8.
C'est-à-dire, oui, j'ai pas de chiffres. Je devine.
In fact, none of us have any sheep. We think we do. We think we have numbers, but we don't.
Yeah, I try to avoid them.
Well, in that case, maybe you should like pay more attention to them.
Absolutely.
So, any comments, questions? I didn't translate the last bits, but I can.
The joke, right? funny story.
Il
translate me.
Il y a quelqu'un qui est au bord de la rivière et qui veut traverser. Mais il n'y a pas de pont, ni ferry, il n'y a rien, il veut traverser. Et il passe son temps à essayer de traverser, à trouver le chemin pour traverser. Il est obsédé par ce qu'il y a de l'autre côté. Comme on dit toujours que l'herbe est toujours plus verte de l'autre côté, etc. Et puis il y a quelqu'un qui arrive sur l'autre rive. Et le type il dit ah, aide-moi, je veux traverser, je veux être sur l'autre rive, etc. Et l'autre lui crie en retour tu es déjà là. So, we're already there. But we don't see it, you know, like that guy who thinks he's got his eye on the other side, and he thinks that there's another side, and that's where he has to be. And in fact, he's not. The fact that there is another side is not wrong. You go to the river, and there's two sides. No, that's true. Where we make our mistake is that we think we should be on the other side.
Yeah. Yes, but perhaps he wants to make something on the other side. He has something to do on the other side.
Perhaps. Absolutely. It's possible. Usually, however, we think that we have to be on the other side to do it when we can do it right here. Souvent, c'est ce qu'on pense. Qu'il faut qu'on aille sur l'autre côté pour le faire quand on peut le faire ici. And that's where we become trapped, thinking that we... Somewhere else, someone else, different tools, different knowledge... Different time, different shape. You know, so this kind of thing happens regularly. We've all probably seen it. Someone who works really hard all their life and doesn't do what they want to do and then says, well, I'll do it when I retire, and they retire, and within a year they're dead.
Yeah.
It's funny, huh? That kind of thing happens. I've seen that several times. And of course, people die, right? And they have a heart attack and they die, or whatever it is. The point is that can help us to recognize that we can do now what we've been saying we will do later. We don't have to wait till we retire. We can do it now.
Yes, and aren't we trapped every day?
Mm-hmm. Every moment.
Every moment.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's endless.
We are endless.
Yes. It's endless.
Right. Yeah.
We are endlessly trapped and endlessly free.
Yes.
You know? It's the same.
So, I mean, we have to relate to the fact that we are trapped every moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Accept.
Acknowledge.
And do something about it once in a while?
Absolutely.
If you can?
Absolutely. Because we can every moment as well.
Yes.
We can.
You can make a decision every... You have a choice every moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what does it mean to be trapped? Mm-hmm. What does that mean? To be trapped?
Yeah. Is it bad?
No.
What does it mean concretely?
Yeah,
to be
I mean it's not always bad to be trapped.
Mm-hmm. But trapped even means what? That we
not to see the situation as
not to see clearly the situation. It's or to deny.
Wanted to be somewhere else. Wanted to be someone else.
What I see a lot is that people feel trapped by their work. That they work a lot, but they don't think they can get out, or they think it has to be like that, and only when they are retired they will have time for other things. And at the same time, those thousands who are unemployed, they feel trapped by not working. It's
absolutely.
It's always a big subject of not being free.
That's it. Absolutely. And can we then be free? You know, it's like that story I told of one of my colleagues telling me that my talents were going to waste by, you know, writing this stupid thing I had to write, stupid as a judgment, but for the newspaper about, you know, that the article that talks about famous people in the news, you know, kind of Angelina Jolie did this and Brad Pitt did that and, you know, sports stars did this and that kind of thing. And one day I did that. I had to do that for the newspaper. And my colleague saw me doing it. And he sent me an email through, you know, a message through the computer, and he said, "What a waste of your talents. You've been reduced to this, you know." And I went back to him and I said, "Well, it's possible to see it that way. That's true. We could also see it as I use my talents elsewhere. You know, I do other things in my life. This is not all that I do." And I said, "It's also possible to see it, and this is the way that I experience it, is that my talents are never wasted if I apply them fully to whatever I'm doing."
Oh, yeah.
So I apply my talents to writing this article.
Yeah, doesn't matter.
And they're never, my talent is not wasted.
No.
I don't know about that.
No.
This is my experience. I'm not saying it has to be everyone's experience. This is my experience.
Yeah.
And he sent me back an email saying, "Yeah, I suppose it's right, you do other things."
He was with you on that one.
But this is my experience. Mm-hmm. And I truly, my talent is not wasted by writing about Angelina Jolie. However, I can say, I am able to see that because I can let go of my judgment about this information is more important than that information. I apply my same energy, my same zeal, my same discipline to that as I do to this, to talking to you right now.
Yeah.
When I'm talking to my colleagues, I don't say the same things to them. But I am as present with them as I am with you.
Yeah.
And I don't have an idea about how they should be, or what they should say, or what I should say to them.
Yeah.
Whatever arises, I talk with them. I meet them where they are. That was the best thing my teacher said to me when I started teaching, was you have to meet people where they are.
That interests me a lot, that, because I find that, you know, it's comfortable in a group like this to talk about all of these concepts and ideas which most of us kind of grasp, or at least kind of understand or beginning to understand. But when you are not in this group and when you're with other people, that's the harder part. Or at least I find that not a problem, but I'd like to hear more about that.
Well, I might ask you. You know me from a different circumstance.
Yeah.
You knew me Before yeah. ever coming to this
yeah,
group.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Before 9/11. I was thinking about that this morning.
Yeah, yeah. You knew me before
yeah,
that.
Before
that.
Mm-hmm.
I was already practicing and living yeah. in Zen community and doing, yeah. this was my life at the time. But you knew me then.
Yeah, but I didn't know that.
Right.
Yeah.
So...
Does it matter?
No, it doesn't. That doesn't matter.
No, did There's I no seem one. Like a different person? Was I behaving in...
Not at all. No.
An outrageous manner? Or was I saying things to people? Or yeah. I don't know. You know.
No, I don't mean that.
You mean sharing that. Your experience?
Not particularly. No. Just dealing with people. Really.
I bring, like I said...
Like that line you said... What was it? Deal with people.
Meet people where they are.
Rather than do meet. I like that. Meet people where they are.
And that's what I do.
Yeah.
Because I'm also there. Mm-hmm. I'm in the same place they are. Mm-hmm. So if I'm coming from them from another place, I'm not really there.
Mm-hmm. You parlez about children. Mm-hmm. With children, we are authentic. Mm-hmm. With children, the same at mm-hmm. the same way. It's the same process. It's with children.
We meet the children.
Old people. Yeah. With yeah. I think it's the same.
Yes.
Yeah. About you, when you were speaking about your talents. And I just see for myself the way I would react, and I think I would say to myself, talents are not my talents. Talents I can have been given to me, and so okay, I do what I have to do with them, ce qui m'est demandé. And so for me it's a way, but I think I need this way. It's a way not to put myself in the middle of a high constructed I.
Mm-hmm.
Je sais pas si tu vois ce que je veux dire, si j'ai été claire.
To not be identified with
oui,
my
oui,
talent.
Et plutôt dire, ces talents, bah, voilà, ce que je sais faire, ça m'a été donné. Ce que je peux faire, ça m'a été donné. Et bah, je l'utilise si ça peut servir ou certaines causes, ou certains travaux, ou certaines personnes, je le fais. Et en fait, c'est un espèce de truc... pour pas me dire c'est moi qui fais ça, c'est moi qui.
Mm-hmm.
C'est moi qui donne, c'est moi qui enseigne, c'est moi qui...
And we could take that even a step further and say the idea that it's serving some purpose is too much.
Yeah.
You know, that it's... There's still a touch mm-hmm. of, okay, it's not mine, but it's doing someone some good. You know? To just doing what needs to be done. Just, you
know. Je sais, mais et s'il y a des graines qui prennent, bah c'est bien. Sinon, c'est bien.
Mm.
Mm. But it's sometimes frustrating when you're with other people who are in the materialistic mindset to communicate about values. I think
Can you give an example?
Yeah, I could say, give an example, say in my family, where they're all kind of upwardly mobile and acquisitional, and I find that kind of, I find myself not buying into it, When I'm with them, I spend time with them. I like spending time with them, but there's a but, you know, and there's a kind of gulf between us where they see my, values is not the right word, but attitude, say. They make judgments. I think that's what it is. They make judgments which I feel are based on the wrong premise, and I can't communicate that to them. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
Can I say something?
Yeah, sure.
When I hear this, it makes me think of the circle of speech that we do here. Even, okay, of course, we are all here for the same thing, and there are some common interests or common values or whatever. But still, there are, when in a circle of speech, there are people you hardly know, and they share things with you from their heart. It sometimes may. Yeah, for me that was, we really all have the same, you know.
Yeah, I've
and even if
that,
people seem very hard or, you know, tough and nothing to do with, I think they have the same, you know, if they had been given the opportunity or the... you know, you might share that with them too, even if it doesn't happen at all.
So
but it's,
and in fact, it's my perception of the others, which is the only thing I can change, I guess.
Well, and by thinking that their judgment is wrong, that's a judgment that you have as well, and that's okay. We all have opinions and judgments and things. Yeah. But then, what do you do with that? As you say, we look. We have the only thing we can do is do it ourselves and what we feel.
It brings what you said. I mean, what both of you said in the conversation brought two things in my mind. One is I have an uncle. Who is into finance and stuff and completely unable to relate on that level of emotions. Okay, we can relate on because we're all human and he's just incapable of that. However, the question is, as Amy said, when you're with kids, you give them stones because this is what I understand. So my way to communicate with him is to speak about practical matters because he's very, very happy to help me on things, on practical things. So that's the first thing, like to go back on the level that they can understand. And the other thing is sometimes I do have that feeling also, it's like, oh, we can't communicate on those values and all that. And the question I ask myself is, why is it so important for me to communicate on that also? Why is it so important for me to explain them to them what I've been doing and what I think? It's like, who cares? Actually, what am I holding on to at that point? I've been sitting for the past 2 years on a class with other students in finance and management, and it was like, c'était vraiment celui qui avait la plus grosse, to speak. This was like, it was like, how much are you making? It was only about that, even to teachers. Like, okay, let's put it open, how much do you make? Yeah. This was that level of conversation. Yeah. Why do I care? I mean, it's like, okay, that's just different.
Meet them where they are.
Yeah, and then, I think I was being myself. I wasn't necessarily part of that game, and And the people, and I connected to certain people and I didn't connect with other people. It's like the question is, why isn't it so important for me to know them, that so that I'm so special, that I do certain things they don't do, or that I have certain values they don't share, or they should share my values because my values are so much better than theirs. Who cares? I mean, for me it seemed very... There's something, I think, interesting to ask ourselves, why do I want those people to... why do I want to speak about Buddhism to certain people?
No, I don't want
or mean to
Buddhism,
you know,
necessarily.
No, not that, but I mean to like values, you know. I wish we could share those same values. It's like,
and we have
what's
to be
behind?
Careful with meet them where they are, that we are, once again, we don't do it from a feeling higher perspective.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
Exactly. Get to their level, but I mean, what level are you talking from anyway?
Exactly. Yeah.
But maybe also we are looking for intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it seems hard when speaking about technical things or economical things, or to be really, really in an intimate link with the person, the way I see things.
Well, maybe true intimacy is to be intimate with whatever the situation is, and some situations...
It's easier.
It's not about intimacy.
It's not about the kind of intimacy that other intimacy is. You know? Intimacy is really just to be one with whatever is. And in some, it doesn't look the same in each circumstance.
Perhaps intimacy pass by through the regard, the eyes.
Mm.
Not with the words.
It can, absolutely.
And the voice.
Yeah, I don't feel it's like we should have an orgasm each time we speak to someone. No, but it's, in a way, this is what we're looking for. Like, you know, those great experiences, and, you know, it should be like Satori each time we make a step, you know, and the idea of a Satori that we have.
No, but it was. Useful to see this for myself.
Mm-hmm. The desire
to see this search of. Yeah.
And it's important to acknowledge it.
Yeah.